You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In his first feature-length film, writer and director Keith Miller produced a story that finds beauty in the mess and tragedies of real life. Welcome to Pine Hill, blurs documentary with fiction while navigating issues of race, class, and relationships. The film was selected for the 2011 Independent Filmmaker Lab. It's won a number of awards, and now it's being shown as part of BAM Cinema Fest tomorrow. I'm very happy that it brings Keith Miller to our show today. Welcome.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
Now, your background is as a painter, isn't it? And you teach art at Gallatin, at the school at NYU?
Yeah, I've been a painter for 20 years, and I still consider myself a painter and still paint. But about 6 or 7 years ago, I started making films, short films, and that eventually led to this Welcome to Pine Hill.
This film begins when Shannon, who's I don't know how much is real and how much is the invented character, but he plays a former drug dealer named Abu in the film, stops you on the street and claims that you have his dog. Did that really happen?
Yeah, well, I should go back a little bit before that incident. I had started making short films and longer films, but they were kind of bordering the line between reality and fiction, very intentionally disregarding that line. So I made a documentary that there was a whole segment of that was scripted, and then a few other pieces that I just realized that I don't really find that distinction to be too real. Watching a show like CSI, I thought, well, those people really are doing that. I know they're actors, but, you know, so I thought, oh, that's an interesting place to go.
And, but this is different than reenactments.
Yeah, right. And, well, what happened was I found the puppy, a four-month-old puppy on my street in South Slope in Brooklyn, and, you know, looked around for the owner, and I put up signs and knocked on doors. You know, I know my street pretty well. And no one had lost a dog. No one was asking around for it. And 2 months later, at about 11:30 at night, Shannon came up to me, and he said, "That's my dog."
How far from your home?
Like literally right across the street.
Oh, so he just hadn't seen the signs?
No, he hadn't. And that's the first thing I said to him, like, well, why didn't you put up signs? And, you know, why didn't you knock on doors? And why didn't you do all this stuff? And, you know, he's 6'4", African-American, 300 pounds. He works as a bouncer. He's a big guy. And as soon as I asked, like, why didn't you knock on doors? I realized, like, oh, he, you know, stop and frisk. He'd be arrested. You know, the cops would be there in a minute. So that conversation in the movie is quite short, but in reality, it was an hour and a half.
But the original idea, I assume, was to do a short film that reenacted what you had gone through there.
Yeah, the way we developed the film after that is that in the morning when I went to pay him for the dog, I said, you know, this reveals a lot of interesting stuff about class.
You bought the dog from him.
Well, yeah, I gave him money for it. I gave him the money he paid. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's not in the movie, but he realized that he kind of couldn't take care of the dogs. He had just moved out of his mother's house, things like that. And so in the morning I said, you know, this reveals a lot of things about class and race and expressions of love and ownership. And I asked him if he wanted to make a movie about it. And he was pretty suspicious at first. You know, like, what's your angle? That's exactly what he said, like, you know, later. But we started meeting and hanging out together and talking about, you know, his view of race and what he was thinking, what I was thinking about it, and things like that. And so then we shot that movie.
And then you had to trust that he would be a good actor because he's not a professional. But he turned out to be terrific. He just looked so great on screen.
Yeah. Well, you know, after we did the first scene, the first scene in the movie, what was called Prince William, the short about the dog, we had by that point become very close. And I thought on screen he was very expressive and like very intimate character. And I wanted to work more with him because he was, like you say, he wasn't just a good actor. He was kind of a great actor. And I think through the course of making Pine Hill, like, it was proven again and again that he's like a really powerful presence on screen.
Who came up with the idea, the plot?
I did, yeah.
But then I'm assuming there was a certain amount of collaboration, and some of the scenes probably were improvised.
Yeah, a lot of the scenes are improvised. There's some scripted scenes, but a lot of it is just getting people together and arranging situations and kind of setting them up.
How much of the film resembles Shannon's real life?
I think there's a lot of it that kind of definitely takes off from there. You know, Shannon looks at it and some of it says, like, that scene felt really real. But I don't think that he would say, and we've talked about this, he wouldn't say, like, oh, that's exactly the way things are. It's very close to our conversations, but it doesn't look like it from the outside.
Well, in the movie, he plays a former drug dealer and now working as an insurance claims agent. You said he's a bouncer at a bar. Had he ever worked as an insurance claims agent?
Yeah. His job in the movie is similar to the job that he did have in real life, and he does work as a bouncer still. And so, yeah, those interviews are based on interviews that he would really have. Kind of, you know, it was a kind of a very different office where he would work, in different caliber kind of thing. But
he seemed to know what he was doing there.
Yeah.
There's a particularly moving scene where Abu returns to his mother's house. He obviously hasn't seen her for a while. We want to play a little clip.
Oh, great.
I guess I just had to learn by myself.
You have to learn by, from your mistake, not by yourself. You have to learn from your mistake. Yeah. You make a mistake, you learn from it.
So. Just saying I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, I'm still angry.
I know. I didn't say everything is going to be perfect.
Well, it ain't never be perfect. It will never be perfect again. But we can work on that.
Was it serendipity that that ice cream truck came along just at that time?
Well, you know, the movie is filled with what could be afterwards called serendipity. At the time, of course, I was like silently screaming to the sound person to run outside and shut that truck up. But there is like a poetic beauty in it. And
oh, well, this is about a mother and a son, and that whole business of loving someone despite the problems. This is, you know, brings you back to all the childhood issues.
Yeah, well, that's
was
what
Was she really his mother?
No. None of the people in the movie besides him are really the people who they are purported to be. You know, some of them are actors, and she is not an actor, but she is not his mother.
You never know when walking the dog will lead you to produce an award-winning film like it did with Keith Miller in his first feature called Welcome to Pine Hill. You've been showing it at festivals and winning awards again and again. This must, I mean, I hate to say it, must come as a somewhat a surprise because...
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, really, because you probably start off with rather modest goals and then discovered that you had done something that reaches a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, when we were shooting the movie, someone said to me, oh, you're going to submit to Berlin and Sundance? And, you know, I said, I'm trying to make it through today. I'm trying to make this day. Every day was pretty chaotic intentionally. And so when we finished, I cut the movie from September till April, and I don't think a single person saw what I was doing during those 6 or 7 months. So the fact that we have gotten any attention at all feels great. Yeah.
Did you specifically set out to explore racial issues in this film?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't looking for racial issues. Race is on my mind kind of constantly. Like, we're in New York, we're in America. I think race is a big issue. But, when I came across that situation, I thought, this is a great way to go enter through, like, the dogs is the good entry point. And then it comes up in the movie, but when I talked to Shannon about race in the movie, he gets upset. He said, this isn't a movie about race. And I said, yeah, you're right, it's not. It's about one man's experience.
Although there are a number of racially charged scenes in the film, one between Abu, Shannon's character, and another man at a bar, another case where Abu stereotypes a taxi driver from Ecuador. And then there's a very effective scene where Abu and a bunch of his friends from his drug dealing days drink beers in a backyard. And it almost feels like we're eavesdropping on something that would have occurred even if you weren't making a film.
Well, that's a great way to put it. I mean, my goal was to get the natural cadence of conversation and an intimacy to every scene where we feel like just like that, you know, that we were there. So the way we worked, we were shooting those scenes with three cameras live and doing takes of up to 45 minutes. And the goal was that it feel really like we're either eavesdropping or participating. I was very happy with both feeling. You know, a number of people have said to me, like, how did you happen to have cameras when that happened? It's almost an insult, but I take it as a great compliment because that was the goal.
Because you set up those characters and you told them what kind of characters you wanted them to play?
Yeah, and as we were shooting, you know, I was nudging the conversation in certain directions, and then they, you know, asked them to repeat things. And, you know, we'd kind of do multiple takes within the take, and I end up in camera a lot. But I just said, you know, my directive to everyone, cast and crew, was this is reality. Reality doesn't stop. We don't stop. Until I said cut. So like 45 minutes, you know, either the camera ran out of batteries or, you know, They just couldn't carry these cameras anymore. The actors were just about to pass out. I said, all right, let's stop now then. We can do it again.
I don't want to give away too much of the story, but Abu shuts himself off from everyone.
Yeah, you know, talking with Shannon, him and I have a lot of similarities, even though that, you know, sounds funny because we're his age and all this other stuff different. But the kind of expressing oneself in a nonverbal way, I think I felt like that was really his strength as a movie character, and a similarity that I had, like not saying, oh, woe is me, all this stuff is happening, and just kind of presencing people. That was kind of a lot of what I had in mind, this kind of journey that one takes. And I think that people do get committed and engaged with him. You know?
Have people offered him movie roles as a result of this?
People have asked me about his interest in that, directors that I've met and producers. So far, no one I know has asked him specifically to be in a specific part. Mm-hmm. So there's interest, I guess you could say, but interest in movie world is peculiar.
Well, you've made short films until now, and you teach art.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean you're going to start making more features?
Yeah, I actually am in the beginning a new feature right now, working with someone that Shannon introduced me to, who I am now friends with. He's a bouncer also, but he's the gang leader in East New York, and I'm working on a story about what it means to become a man, like he aging out to become a father or aging in to become like a macho guy, whatever, you know, ideas of manhood, things like that.
You've dedicated this film to the memory of René Peñalosa Galván. Who's he?
René was a fellow member of the Brooklyn Filmmakers Collective, and he got a rare form of cancer in summer of 2010, and he died on June 28th of that summer, and we started rolling cameras on August 13th. So he inspired a lot of the approach and the story itself.
Now, the film is being shown as part of the BAM Cinema Fest, mm-hmm. Which is going on right now at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And it's going to be shown tomorrow?
Yeah, we have. Apparently the first screening at 4:30 has done so well that they added a second screening at 4:40, which is great for us.
In the other house?
In the other theater right next door. And that, you know, BAM Cinema Fest is kind of the perfect place for us to play. They're really so receptive, and half the crew is just within a bike ride away there.
And there are still tickets available for the 4:40 screening. For details, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. Has any distributor talked about picking this up?
Yeah, we're in talks with people. You know, they a
this
lot
is
of
the perfect HBO movie, I think.
Oh, well, yes, HBO, it is a perfect HBO movie.
If you're listening, you know, Keith is taking calls.
Yes, exactly. You can call me right now. There's a lot of distributors who have looked at it and said, I love your movie. This is a tough one, right? You know, no name cast, black movie, whatever. You know, I think the awards and the good press we've gotten should help towards that. I can only hope.
Thank you so much for being on our show, Keith.
Thanks for having me, Leonard.